is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle production of American Fiesta, starring Gary Wayne Cash, a witty, hopeful tale of imperfection and acceptance. American Fiesta will take place at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This Triangle production will run from November 29th through December 22nd. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle production of American Fiesta, starring Gary Wayne Cash, a witty, hopeful tale of imperfection and acceptance. American Fiesta will take place at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This Triangle production will run from November 29th through December 22nd. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Today we're going to talk about independent booksellers, about what it means, what the outlook is for being a bookseller, especially of African-American materials. We have with us Michael Hicks, who is new to the Portland area and is the owner of Black Rose Books. We are also lucky to have our favorite and our ongoing colleague, O.B. Hill, owner of Reflections Mirror Image Books, and for those of you who are familiar with Reflections Coffee and Books, a longtime owner of that. And Emma Jackson Ford is here with us, bookwoman, and I am Patricia Welch, the library lady. Welcome to Black Book Talk. Gentlemen, the question that I want to ask is, given the climate for any independent bookstore, any independent bookseller, why would anybody want to do that now? Michael, why are you coming into it? OB, what can you share with us from your experiences?
Well, for myself, it's more of a passion that I've had. Books are something that I've enjoyed for quite a long time. And coming from Chicago, I realized that there's a definite need just to get this information out. Just trying to kind of feel, I think, something that's fairly needed. So with that, I moved to Portland with that idea, and it's finally just coming to life for me right now.
I got involved with books at a very early age. First book that I remember dealing with anything that resembled me was Little Black Sambo. And Butter being generated from tigers going around a tree to be placed on pancakes. And I went through a whole series of education in schools without seeing anybody who resembled me in them, and graduated from high school without even reading a book dealing with black people. So once I got interested in just reading in general, As I grew older, I began to collect books, and I remember sending my children to the Black Education Center, and they had a bookstore, and I was very happy for that.
Yeah. Well, that's one of my, I like to say, my specialties. I'm actually going to specialize in Black children's books. We find that the kids are learning to read, but there's no interest there. There's no something to sustain them. So you find yourself reading materials that don't interest you. So you find yourself not reading. For you, reading stories, adventures, ideas that reflect you, you could recognize the characters, the stories, some of the peoples. It'll keep you reading, for one thing, and it'll also open your mind to possibilities. And I think that is something that's been missing for a long time, very long time.
And yet, you're obviously a book reader. When did you become interested in books? I'm especially curious because you're saying you're specializing in children's books. Mm-hmm. So what kind of books were out there for you when you were young and just starting?
Well, that was a little bit different. I'm a little older. So my dad was a, you know, bless him, he was a sort of a, almost a militant. The first book that I actually truly remember that I read that opened my eyes to so many things was Man-Child in the Promised Land by Carl Brown. My father actually just gave me that book one day and just kind of left it to me. And I picked it up. And once I read that story, coming again from Chicago and the inner cities, his life was mine. You know, some of the adventures and the ideas, the attitudes, the fears that he experienced, I knew firsthand. And I, again, that was the first book that I ever read that reflected my life in general.
But still, can you really make a living as a bookseller owning your own bookstore these days?
Well, that's the difference. I'm not actually a bookstore owner. I'm a vendor. I have some different ideas about how to get these books out. Not being tied to brick and mortar, for one thing, my overhead is low. And because I'm here in a smaller city, what I'm doing right now is vending events. So wherever you are, I could be. As this thing grows for me, it's coming. You know, I have two events set in January, two King Day celebrations. So it's easy for me to gear my titles to those particular events. If it's a children's party, if it's graduation, if it, whatever it might be, whatever kind of celebration organization is having some sort of event where we gather as a people, I could be there too with titles that's specific for particularly that organization or crowd or group or whatever event is going on at that time. And so again, my overhead is very low, and because I am mobile, I don't have a lot of expenses. I think I can make some money, but again, money is not right now a motivating factor in why I'm doing this. This is more or less something I feel that needs to be done. If I can get books into children's hands, I think I've accomplished quite a bit.
I've just come back from Little Rock,
mm-hmm.
and one of my old classmates' sister opened a Black bookstore several years ago. And we talked a lot about whether or not this was going to be a success and what we needed to do to make her a success. Right. Well, when I was booking my trip, I noticed they had places to go in Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Hearn's Gallery is on places to go. That's the name of her bookstore. Started out as Hearn's Bookstore, and then she added a Black art gallery to it, and she has lots of events there.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone is doing anything in Little Rock, she always has some sort of gathering there.
Exactly.
So that she gets a lot of exposure.
Exactly. And that's the point I'm trying to build to. Again, this is a brand new venture, new in town. So I didn't want to wait till the stars aligned and everything was in order. I'm starting this thing right now. It's a work in progress, but it's in progress. So I feel that with that attitude, and again, the social media that's out there, just kind of getting the word out, which I've been doing in a very limited basis recently, will help sustain that. I think it'll grow from that, and I think it'll grow very rapidly.
I'm looking at an article about the closure of Humane Books in New York, and I think Humane actually started in Texas. And then there were one or two more stores. Then the owner essentially moved, the original owner moved to New York. Apparently, she sold it to somebody else because the name that I'm looking at isn't the same. But in terms of why Humann, which was nationally known, and when you go to New York, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, that's where we're going. Why she decided to close, and she said she's closing the physical door, but she is planning a 20 years forward vision. And she says that, let's see something. The bookstore is known for hosting events with black authors. It's going to close. And the owner said that they're working on building our amazing bookstore of the future. The industry will be forced to reconcile the future place of real books. And she says that even though she was making more money and she might have been able to stay for a while, she said that the spike in revenue, probably when people heard she was leaving, didn't pay for the changes the business needed to compete. Right. She said, if you're making money, it's a business. If you're not, it's social work. I'm not interested in social work. And so she's trying to figure out how to combine what she wants to do with the new electronic world of books, because that's one thing that appears to be a really important factor. So I'm just wondering, OB, when you opened Reflections, how many years ago was that? What inspired you? Talk about, you know, the beginning of that labor of love, because that was in one kind of period and things changed so quickly. By the time that you all decided to close about, what, 2 years ago, it was a very different climate. But tell us about the beginning.
Well, actually, there was a group of people who came together, including Gloria McMurtry and myself. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go into the business of selling books at first. I sort of ended up managing a bookstore. And it was like divine intervention to me. You don't go into the book-selling business, or any business for that matter, if you're trying to assist a lot of people to make money. What you're trying to do is disseminate information. Well, for instance, television is a main medium now. Cable TV has all types of channels, hundreds of channels. And out of all those hundreds of channels, there's only one black channel, and it's not even owned by African-American people. So you begin to recognize the fact that we are missing. There is a void in the community, and I understand exactly what the gentleman is saying. You try to fill a void, and you don't be looking at it in terms of money. You be looking at it in terms of future possibilities and passing the baton.
And again, with the children's books, once I get you reading, once you find yourself interested in your own stories, your own adventures, that's a lifetime thing. You know, you're going to find yourself, you're looking for that because you know that it's there now. A lot of people just don't understand that it's there. So I like to think that with me being able to come where you are will expose a lot of that. And there's so much material now. There's so many black authors out there that are writing things that's, you know, you figure even 10 years ago, it's unimaginable now because this, all this self-publishing and this sort, it's it makes it very easy for people to get their ideas on paper and print.
One of the great things about Reflections was that they had a coffee shop so you could relax and peruse the books before you made a decision. I knew I could find my black calendars there, black artists. Calendars there to use at work. Just all kinds of things were available because it was a building. I didn't go online to order. Right. It was right there, and I could talk with other people who might have read the books that I wanted before I actually chose.
And that's an idea, again, that's growing. I have to start somewhere. I could have sat back because, again, new in town. I could have sat back and a year later decided, okay, let's give this a try. But I couldn't. I'm going to start where I am, and it's going to build, surely, because for a lot of bookstores, that was the profit margin, the calendars, the coffee, that sort of thing, because it didn't depend on people buying books from them necessarily, surely. But right now, I don't need that to make this happen. Again, my expenses are very low. My only expense is the books themselves.
Okay, but when you're looking forward in terms of growing the businesses, I'm sitting here and what I'm hearing is that selling books to black audiences is something that it sounds like it's something you do on the side, that you should have a job or have some other income stream and that you do this as a labor of love. And yet I can't help but think that there are some people that there's some way that you can do this and combine a love of books with a sustainable income, because thanks to Oprah and a whole lot of other things, I mean, black people are reading. And that's one of the things I think a lot of people really don't, they still don't get.
Right.
Actually, black folks read a lot.
Yeah.
I see it in the library, but I also see it. I mean, people are reading. When I talk to folks, we're talking about books we're reading. And there has to be a way of channeling this. And I think, unfortunately, we had a way in Reflections. And I think we took it for granted. Because I remember in coming to Portland that after being in Reflections a few times, I told folks, you know, from back in Detroit, where we moved from, I said, you know, this is like Cheers. You go in there, and at some point, if you go in Reflections for like every day for a week, you're going to see everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody from every background came through there, and it was the combination of the books and the programs. I mean, I feel like you guys just did all the right things. But we didn't appreciate it as much as we should have and didn't support it the way we should until it's gone. And, you know, that's too bad. But I still want to think that going down the road, there's a way to do this. I mean, what other kinds of ideas are you thinking of in terms of building the connections that you need to sell these books?
Well, and again, that's the actual long-term goal, to get into a place where I could situate and you know where I am and you could find me. But again, that's down the road for me. I'm in school now for early elementary education. So the actual plan is to tie all this together, teaching young children and books, and putting this together in some sort of way where it's an after-school project, or I'm doing community service work, that sort of thing, as a bookseller. But at this point right now where I am, the finances are just not there for me. The overhead, I can't sustain that right now.
Oh, no, you know, I was thinking of the fact that there are organizations around town now that are talking about bringing in authors, just independently bringing them in, maybe working with somebody who has a relationship with book vendors and, you know, larger scale book vendors, and bring in the books and invite the author, and some percentage of the sale of these books would come back to you. I mean, it seems to me that in this new economy and new way of doing things, that there are ways of getting the word out, getting the product out, and not necessarily having to go through the brick and mortar thing. If you connect it with enough organizations.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to bring in these books. You could do it. Again, referring back to the Human article, they said that they're going to host pop-up shops at various events. So that's essentially what you're saying.
The thing is
to tie into a calendar of event and be seen as the book vendor in the same way that, say, Phyllis Benton of Midnight Ramble Films, you know that Phyllis is the person to go to for African-American films, race films, whatever. And she's not going through the expense and the overhead of having a shop. But anywhere that something significant is happening, Phyllis is there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's not just for you, but for anybody who's considering it, you know, that there are ways that you can get your product to the audience that you want. And if you can make enough connections, I'm hoping, you know, then it can be profitable and the business can be sustained.
And it's interesting because that's the exact way that I'm promoting myself. And I've never read that article, but that's how I am promoting myself now. With social media, the way it works today, as many people as I can meet and connect with this sort, they're going to know. So if you know, your friend knows, I've had an author come in for some sort of signing or reading. We rent a space and we just get the word out. It can and it will be done. I like that. I got to find that article.
Hey, you can have this article. I pulled it off the web. It's going to be there tomorrow, like it was there today.
Yeah, no, it's definitely right now a labor of love. Surely you're in business to make money, but I need to get this off the ground. The money's going to come, and it's going to come fairly quickly because we all know the profit margin in books is not a lot. But again, if I'm getting the material out, it's going to come. And with my emphasis on children's books, you know, how are you going to deny your child a book? You're going to get a book for your child if it's available, you know. So, and I'm making that available.
And people, I can tell you just from my experience, people are hungry for books for black children because there aren't enough, or if they are, they're not promoted properly enough. You know, publishers don't send new black authors out on the road in the same way that they're going to send an established author out. So a lot of these authors, I mean, they want to work with you because they're paying for their plane tickets, their bus tickets, their whatever, train tickets to get out here and get the word out on their books. And a lot of people are doing a lot of self-publishing online, which also, that cuts down on their expenses, but they still need somebody to help them do that push.
And that's it in a nutshell. I've met a couple of local authors already. I'm trying to tie myself into every organization that deals with us as a people. A lot of the educators, a lot of the community groups for children after school and that sort, I'm tying myself into these people just for that. Again, it's not to get rich selling books. It's a way to expose children to themselves. I think once that's done, once they know that's available, now you're going to find yourself looking for me. And that's the place I'm trying to put myself.
You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO.
And OB, anything that you want to share from your experience, because certainly, I mean, more than anybody else in this town, you and Gloria know some of the pitfalls, but also a lot of the rewards. You did this for a while, so there had to be a lot of joy in it. Not just some, but a lot of joy in it.
Well, actually, Reflections are more of a cultural center. It was a place where people could gather and share ideas and socialize and information. You are a part of an organization yourself, Patricia, the library. And you have a very interesting selection of African-American books in the section there that you can go. But most of the people aren't sharing the information. And this is a very important program today because you have to continue to pass the baton. I got pleasure out of meeting and greeting people, not only from Portland, but from all over the nation, bringing in different authors. I brought with me a couple of books that I was introduced to as a student. One was Straight Ahead by William McClendon. He's a local author. And then Black Inventors of America, McKinley Burke.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
These were local people who published books, self-published books. This one here was done in conjunction with the Black Scholar, William McClendon. And both of these gentlemen taught, one at Reed College and then both at Portland State University. And so that's how I sort of took the baton from them, so to speak, and now I'm happy to see that it's being passed on.
Now, again, being connected with these different organizations and especially the educators here in town, I think I have a little bit of an inroad already because they're looking for me. I'm getting questions. People are trying to figure out, you know, how am I trying to do this or how are you going to do this? So definitely local authors are backbone, and I am reachable. You know, you could find me and we could set some things up. I mean, it's not difficult to do. Rent a space, get the word out, and make some stuff happen. I mean, it's just, let's do it. And again, it's not something that it takes a lot to do. It's just putting it together and getting it done. And I'm ready to do that.
And the good thing is that nowadays people are easier to reach. I mean, even if people don't know you, if you're on LinkedIn, if you're on Facebook, you know, there are all kinds of ways that people can get to you and you can get to others. So I think that's a good thing. You know, I don't want to be self-serving, but I do have to mention, since you, well, B said that I was affiliated with an organization that has a lot of books, that there is a Black Books reading group, a new one at the library called Paige Turner's Black Voices, and the fourth Tuesday of every month at 6:15, we gather and read books by African American authors. And this month we're going to be discussing a book by a local author, Denorja Taylor Price. And so, you know, that's the thing. There are so many writers in Portland, I mean, of all races. This is just an area that seems to attract new burgeoning would-be authors. We have an author sitting at the table with us, Emma. We're waiting for you to finish that book. and OB, you're working on your memoirs. So, I mean, the talent is here. Yeah. This is absolutely a book city. You can tell that by the way the library is supported. So, you know, I think that the setting is here, and a lot of the things that are the downfall of others in other times and places could be avoided here. I did want to mention something, not to be a downer, but again, it was an article that said top 10 reasons why African-American bookstores are closing. And this was published by the African-American Literature Book Club.com. And it says, okay, book sales migrated to the internet. Again, that's something that 15 years ago, people didn't anticipate as being a problem, as being competition. When they started, price competition, you know, Amazon, Walmart, not just online, in stores, failure to diversify, that most of it, they didn't make the adjustment fast enough in terms of bringing in other product lines. African-American sections added to stores like Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Walden Books & Borders. Lack of loyalty from customers. I think this, they're saying if they can purchase the same products at a white-owned store that's more convenient, they would do. They just go on and do that. Not understanding that, you know, really, you have to put your dollars here. The Black Expressions Book Club is owned by Doubleday. Got a lot of publicity, so a lot of people went there. They're supporting a black book club, so they feel. Unprofitable locations. Many black-owned bookstores are located in predominantly black classes. I mean, neighborhoods, I'm sorry. But the reading population of black consumers tends to be middle class, and these people tend to live in suburban areas and mixed-race communities. The bookstores are not in proximity to their most likely clientele. Poor management. Many people who opened black bookstores did so because they had a passion for literature, but not necessarily because they had extensive business and management skills. Lack of commitment. I know that was not the case with Reflections, but business ownership is not for the faint of heart and requires a tremendous commitment. Recessions will come and go, but if the commitment is there, the entrepreneur will find a way to adjust. We hope this is true. But at any rate, you know, this is sort of a brave new world, and some of these things I think apply, others I would probably question. But I do hope that in listening to the two of you, that if there are people out there who are interested in bringing black books to a grateful and eager audience, that perhaps they will get in touch with you, Michael, or consult with you, OB, and see.
Emma, we are both affiliated with a writers group. Would you like to elaborate on that a little bit?
Okay. OB and I both belong, and Denorja Price, belong to a group called the Maya Angelou Writers Guild. We meet once a month, and we read whatever we're writing that we want some comment or some help with. We read it to the group, and it's been very nice. I think I was invited to join in 1996, and so it's been going along a very long time. We do a retreat once a year, and it's been very nice to have a captive audience to listen to our writing.
Okay, are there any announcements we have? We're getting a little close to the end, and I know there's something happening today that people should probably know about.
Here's an announcement about batteries. When you want to recycle county use batteries, not personal ones, please either tape both ends and send them to 317/ADM batteries, or if your location has an e-waste bucket, then tape both ends and place it in there. When it is full, the bucket should be left with other mail that distribution picks up, and you should write your mail stop on the bucket so that they know where to bring it back once it has been emptied.
You know something? I think maybe that wasn't the announcement.
Yeah, I'm reading this and thinking, huh? Okay, here's the real announcement. Surviving Tuskegee Airmen will be spending today at Portland Community College Cascade Campus Auditorium. Use the entrance to PCC Cascade at the corner of North Albina and Killingsworth. The Tuskegee Airmen were organized in 1941 as the first fighter group of African-American military pilots and went on to become one of the most decorated units in World War II. Upon their return to the U.S. after the war, however, the airmen were greeted with very little respect. Their presentation starts at 5 p.m. today.
There is one other thing that I would like to say, and I know this is the right announcement. We are very fortunate here to have two newspapers, the Portland Observer, which is 43 years old, and the Scanner, which is published here and also in Washington State. And so a lot of the information that we can get, we can submit articles. Both the newspapers are amenable to assisting in any way they can.
Okay, this is the close of the November edition of Black Book Talk. We're going to close out as we opened up with Miles Davis playing Freddie Freeloader, from his classic album, Kind of Blue. This is the Library Lady saying good reading to you. See you in December.
Goodbye. I'll see you next month.
Bye-bye.
Black Rose Books, BLKROSCBKS at Gmail. Contact me, please.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, November 7th. I'm Kristen Yount. The Oregon Department of Transportation moved boulders under the area around the 205 overpass near Foster Road to deter homeless camps there. The decision to move the rocks stemmed from requests from the Lentz Neighborhood Association. They asked the DOT to do something about the campers. Members of the association, namely Nick Christensen, who chaired the association, complained to KTAU News that he grew weary of seeing random couches and bookcases near the overpass. However, he did not comment about the actual people who were displaced and have begun to camp a few blocks away under the Max overpass. Telephone company AT&T gets paid for metadata that they harvest from overseas terrorist suspects for the United States Central Intelligence Agency. $10 million United States dollars were doled out to the company for voluntarily supplying phone call information. The CIA in no way subpoenaed the company for the data. They simply gave the company the telephone numbers of the people they wanted tabs on in foreign countries, and AT&T was under no obligation to do so, but they supplied the agency with the information. When correspondents had a stateside end, the information about Americans would not be provided because it's illegal for the CIA to spy on people in this country. In a pre-dawn raid, riot police in Athens, Greece, ended the five-month sit-in by fired journalists at a television station. The police fired some tear gas into the area where dozens of unemployed journalists have been occupying the station since its closure. The Greek government took the legendary Hellenic Broadcasting Network, or